Every town has a dark side. This is Andrew Fitzgerald from the Every Town podcast, where every single week we dive into insane and mysterious true crime stories, most of which you've never heard of. Stories like the bizarre disappearance of Tyler Davis in Columbus, Ohio, a 29-year-old father trying to find his way back to his hotel when he disappeared and was never heard from again, and Elizabeth Schoaf from Lugoff, South Carolina, who was abducted from her driveway by a madman and taken to his underground bunker in the woods. We give you all the details you're interested in hearing about without any fluff or fillers, because ain't nobody got time for that. We cover everything from psychopaths to poltergeists, so go check out the Every Town podcast, because every town, no matter how nice it may seem, has a dark side.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Horror Show. Show dissects, mutilates, dismembers, and butchers all of your favorite and not so favorite horror movies and other horror related events. Sean.
I'm Joe.
Well, we are back to normal. It's been a minute.
Yeah.
It's been a minute. Somehow I'm still in Salem, though.
That you are.
Which is fucking weird. Yeah, so we did the Salem show. Any thoughts on that?
Success. Yeah, I loved it, man.
Oh, dude.
Loved it. Loved the meeting everybody afterwards. Mm-hmm. And thank everyone that came out. It was good.
You know,
it was a big turnout.
You know what pissed me off? Nothing about our show. Another podcast did a show, actually, last night. And they did theirs after the last movie. So their show started at, like, 11.
Okay.
Which, I mean, honestly, sounds like a fucking nightmare. But
agreed.
But they took a fucking picture of themselves with the crowd, and it was like a full venue.
Yes.
And
people are there from the movie.
Correct. It was like, but it pissed me off so much. It pissed me off to no end, dude. It pissed me off to no fucking end. Because I was like,
what was their name?
It was the Faculty of Horror.
Okay.
But, like, it just pissed me off because I was, like, looking at the picture and I was like, how is that full? Like, there's just no way. Like, it's impossible. It's just a fucking impossible. And then I looked and then I scoured the internet trying to disprove their photo. So I don't know. Whatever. I'll probably leave this in. Yeah. And you did an interview with Linnea Quigley that we did not include last week.
I did. So, are we going to put it on this episode?
We're gonna put it. Let's listen to that because then we'll discuss it. Let's listen to it right now.
So this is Joe from The Horror Show. I'm here with the Scream Queen, Linnea Quigley. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you, and being able to say Scream Queen is a really good thing because a lot of people can't.
It's wonderful.
It's a hard, you know, it's a tongue twister.
It is a tongue twister.
Yes.
Yeah. So the first thing I wanted to ask you. Do you still use close-up toothpaste?
Well, sometimes. It's hard to find, but at the dollar store, you can find tons of close-up toothpaste because it makes your breath so fresh.
That commercial's wonderful, by the
You're
way.
You're white and fresh. Yes. Thank you. Oh, my God, I can't believe you saw that.
I did. Second thing, Jack LaLanne, you used to work at a spa that was owned by him. Is that correct?
Yes.
And did you ever have the chance to meet him?
I met Jack LaLanne, and, of course, I was, like, starstruck. Because my mom used to work out with him on black and white TV when I was a really little kid. And the one thing I'd get excited about was when he'd have his dog Happy, which was a white shepherd, on. I'd be like, oh, the dog's on. And so I met him, and he was really nice. He was just like he is, you know, like in public and everything. He was a really nice guy.
Nice. Yeah, he always blew my mind because he was like, swim the English Channel
handcuffed
or like have things tied to him.
I know. He didn't get enough credit for all the things he did.
Yeah. And if you go on his wiki page, I mean, it's incredible. Second question, the Skirts,
yes.
Punk band that you were in. You guys practiced in the basement of the Mask, is that correct?
Oh, yes.
Do you have a favorite memory of a band that you saw at the Mask?
Yes, the Go-Go's playing punk and being out of it. I remember that really vividly, and like their song, one of them would be like, I like playing with razor blades, yeah. And they were all on heroin or something. It was crazy. Except Jane. Jane was pretty clean.
Okay. Nice. Have you gotten back together with the Skirts recently? Practiced anything in the works?
Not. I've been doing it just lately on my own. I've been starting to write again and starting to play guitar again.
Nice.
But it's hard. I'm not a solitary musician. I like somebody to be playing with me. And
sure.
You know, like a... I know that sounds really horrible, but if you think of it, take it in the wrong way, but I like it. I like to write songs by myself, but it's like I like to have, like, okay, add on the bass or the drums or something like that.
No, I get it. Absolutely. Yeah. Do you have a favorite punk band, punk album? First one that comes to mind?
I love all punk. Oh, my God. Oh, the favorite punk album. Okay. I guess it would be Susie and the Banshees.
Nice.
If I have to pick anything, yes.
Nice. Love it. Great choice.
Yes.
Did you ever get to see, like, the Germs at Mask or X?
Yes, everybody. We would hide our equipment. Like, I'd put my guitar away and be really scared that Darby was going to come in and, like, because he would wreck things.
Yeah.
He was known for wrecking your equipment. And so I'd be like, oh, my God, he's going to come in and take, and my guitar's going to be in half. And I'd be, like, scared.
That's awesome. Great story. You played Sleeping Beauty in a movie, correct?
Yes, I did.
You have any memories of playing that?
Yeah.
It's one of your earliest ones, right?
I was telling people, I wrote in my diary, I am a star. You know, because I had some lines in a movie. Not a lot because I was Sleeping Beauty, but I was in a movie.
That's awesome.
And I had some lines.
Savage Streets, you worked with Linda Blair and John Verm.
Yes.
Do you have any fond memories of working on that? Any stories?
Yeah, it was... I was totally just, like, kind of, like, scared of Linda Blair because, to me, she was, like, this big star because she did The Exorcist and all the TV movies, Born Innocent and all that. So I was, like, a little bit intimidated by her. And also because the other girls were dressed cool and I was, like, not. It's like, I didn't get to hang around them. It was like real life. It was like I was kind of the outcast.
Nice. Do you ever get starstruck on the set of a movie?
I get starstruck a lot of times, and I have the hardest time going up to somebody and saying anything. I usually look at my feet, and I don't know what to say, and then I think, if I say anything, I'm going to make a fool of myself. I've done that to John Hurd, Napoleon Dynamite, Pedro, who was in it, from Napoleon Dynamite, A lot of people. I just, like, look at my feet. David Hasselhoff.
I would look at my feet, too.
Yes.
I would be starstruck.
And he asked me what was down
Knight
there,
Ryan.
And I'm like, nothing.
That's great. How did you become a soul in Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4?
Well, my husband was working on the film, Nightmare 4, and they thought it would be cool if I could, you know, be in the movie, but, you know... in a different way. Not a main character, but just coming out of the chest. And some people recognize me by my breastises. And I'm like, what? How can you do that? You know, it's like, it was really weird.
That is weird. Does that ever creep you out when people say things like that?
Well.
Or did it?
I just wonder how they could.
Yeah. Were you a mannequin in Tourist Trap?
Yes.
You were.
I got my SAG card, Screen Actors Guild card, from that.
Nice. That movie creeped me out, those mannequins.
Yes.
Moving around like that.
Yes. Yeah. That was a creepy movie, actually, that was done.
Underrated.
Well.
Definitely.
It is underrated.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite movie, you know, Return of the Living Dead, Silent Night, Deadly Night? Which one is your favorite?
Return of the Living Dead is my favorite. Yes.
I think that.
I love the music and just the characters in it.
It's one of the best.
The director.
Yeah.
And,
one of the best. But Silent Night, Deadly Night is pretty damn good, too.
It is. It was
that kill scene with the antlers.
Yeah, with the antlers. I was like, I think they didn't want it to be like that, but they thought, oh, is this serious? because the guy that directed it did the Grizzly Adams movies.
Did he?
I think this was a big departure from him. He like was like going in a different way.
Did you ever think that when you were in that movie, it would spawn off 5 sequels with Mickey Rooney being one of them?
I didn't think it would, you know, just last, you know, a week in the theater. I was like, you know, this is a silly, stupid film where, you know, I'm in the middle of, like, making out with my boyfriend, and I'm like, oh, I gotta get the cat in. Yeah, I guess I was really into it.
How high was the set of Nice Dreams?
I didn't see any pot smoking, but there were some times when they would close down the set in the middle of the night. You know, I'd work nights, and someone would take off, and I'd be like, to Cheech, I'd say, what's going on? Why are we shutting down right now? And somebody was with a couple girls. I found out, and I'm like, I got so mad. I'm like, we're having to wait. You know, it's like 4 in the morning. You know, like I would be so like upset about it.
I would be too. That's kind of,
I know,
that's late.
It's rude. Yeah. Do it another time.
Yeah, you can sneak a little puff.
Yeah, wait till we're done.
I could talk to you for hours, but I know you had a long day. So are you promoting anything? Anything you want to get out there?
Oh my God, there's so much. I'm doing a documentary, Extras, all about the life of extras. Phantasm magazine just came out. There's a limited edition cover that I think there's only 100 of or something like that. And there are pictures that nobody's really seen before of me, and I bear it all. Well, not all, but pretty much all. And I just finished Clownado, which I think is going to be a cult film, so I go down on the record saying that. And The Last Thanksgiving and Twilight Camp I just did. And promote animal rights. Everybody, yes, be kind to animals. Don't eat them. Don't wear them. Don't mistreat them.
Love it.
So those are my main things I'm promoting.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for allowing me to sit with you and ask
you.
Well,
yeah. And your podcast. I love it.
Thank you.
You guys are hot.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay, so that was your interview with Linnea Quigley.
Yeah.
Scream Queen. What was your thoughts on meeting her?
Like, honestly, 12-year-old Joe, 13-year-old Joe, like, would not believe it. And it's very odd and uncomfortable because it's like, I've been aroused to you so many times. But, you know, I tried to keep my cool.
Yeah, that is a weird thing. I didn't think about that. I kind of let Joe do the interview solo on that gig. But yeah, that is a weird thing. Yeah, like Return of the Living Dead, there were days I rented it because I was like, you know what? I'd like to see a naked woman today.
Did that in Silent Night, Deadly Night. I mean, yeah. Those were pretty influential in my early teenage years.
Yeah, for sure, man. So that was a cool interview. What is the name of this movie that she was doing? I thought she said Cronado. Like a tornado.
I believe it's Clownado. So, Sean, do you hear that noise?
What is that? What is that?
You hear that, right?
Yes.
It's this fucking asshole's car outside of my house.
And you're in the basement, right?
I am.
I honestly thought.
And my daughter just went to fucking bed.
I thought that was your furnace like exploding.
My ass was vibrating. That's unfucking believable. And the best part about that is earlier today, because I know exactly what house is coming from, they came and knocked on my door.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, we're doing a gender reveal, but the way we're going to do it, because they're big into cars, right?
Yeah.
So they're like, the way we're going to do it is we're going to have a burnout in the street, and the color smoke is either going to be blue or pink. And they were like, the reason they knocked on my door is like, He's like, I know you have a little child. He's like, so if she's sleeping, we won't do it then. Or if you don't want us to do it, like, we won't do it at all. I was like, you know, that's like, I respect that. That's cool. I have no problem with it. You know, and I was like, you know what? We're not even going to be here. So I was all happy. I was like, oh, that was pretty awesome. That's nice of them. And that was fucking like 11 o'clock at night. And they're just doing burnouts in like my driveway for no reason. There's no reveal now.
That's so fucking funny. That's so funny. Oh, shit. That sounded insane.
What were we talking about?
So we were talking about Linnea.
Yeah. Sorry, Linnea.
Oh, and oh, Cronado versus Clownado.
What would be a bigger disaster? Talking about movie-wise.
I mean...
Not like a real-life thing.
So I said Cronado to you earlier, and you were like, I believe it was Clownado. And I was like, you know what? I think I'd rather watch... And I thought Cronado was bad when I texted you. I was like, what the fuck is Cronado? But I think Clownado is infinitely worse.
Yeah, no, it's most definitely Clownado. Comes out next year. I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, my God. So it's just a bunch of clowns in a tornado.
It does appear to be that way. Yes.
Well, you know, they can't all be winners. fuck, that's funny as shit. Well, it was a good interview.
Yeah, she was, all jokes aside, she was a very humble and easy to talk to, and I really enjoyed it because, like I said, I was a big fan of watching her as in my younger days.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that, and I enjoyed your music questions.
Yeah, I mean, she was there for the early punk scenes.
She's so fucking weird.
Talk about that for days. I wish, so after I stopped talking to her, you know, I hit stop recording, and then she told me like 10 different stories on the Dead Kennedys and the band X.
Oh my
I'm like,
God.
Fuck. I was like, I should have just kept recording. Like really good stories that just was off the cusp, so that's missed out on that, but yeah, it was definitely cool to talk to her.
Well, that's awesome. And yeah, other than that, the show was really fucking good. People really liked it. We had a good time. So
definitely. And again, thank you everyone that came out.
Yes.
Everyone that introduced themselves. I mean,
yes.
It was pretty surreal. People coming up to us while we were eating. People coming up to us.
It was nuts. It was nuts.
After the show. Yeah.
It was fucking nuts. Yeah. But now we're doing Silver Bullet. Yeah. And Silver Bullet, I am torn on. I am torn on.
Really?
Yeah. And really? And also, if anyone does like I just want to say this too. If you're in like... the north, I don't know what you'd call it, the northern region of the United States, like 2-hour driving distance from Connecticut, and you know places that do screenings and stuff, hit me up and let's talk about doing something.
Because
it's a good format.
I think that format is great. Just, yeah. I really enjoyed talking about the movie beforehand.
Yep.
And just having people there for that reason.
Yeah, it was really good. But anyway, yeah, so Silver Bullet, 1985.
Yes.
Produced by Dino De Laurentiis, who's
correct.
Who's done literally everything.
Yep, you've seen his name on almost every movie you've ever watched. Dude,
produced 500 movies, 30 of them nominated for Academy Awards. That's fucking insane. But also, I mean, if you make 500 movies, you know, you're gonna hit at least 30 of them for an award.
You're right. The odds are infinitely in your favor. He did The Godfather, though, I believe.
Oh, did he?
I think so.
What a fancy guy. Directed by Dan, I don't know this guy's name, Atias.
Sure.
Atias. He's done a lot of TV, True Blood, Homeland, It's Always Sunny, The Wire, Sopranos. So you have Jake and the Fat Man.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Beauty and the Beast. Remember that fucking show?
With the one with Ron Perlman and the Beast?
That's such a weird fucking show. It was super weird thing, too.
My wife is like the biggest fan of that show.
Who was?
Tina.
Oh, Tina. Well, yeah. I thought you said your dad, and I was about to like fucking faint. And we're start. We got Corey Haim, Gary Busey starring in this flick.
Yeah, a young Corey Haim.
Very young.
A pre-Lethal Weapon Gary Busey, pre-motorcycle accident Gary Busey.
Dude, that motorcycle accident is crazy.
It did nothing to him. It's just something that like Hollywood could pass off. It's like, oh yeah, this guy's crazy now.
I truly believe. Well, it was definitely his agent, right? Like he just started acting crazy, and then they were like, oh, he was like, oh no, don't worry, just that old motorcycle accident. Because in this movie, if you told me that somebody was just filmed, like he did not know he was in a movie, and there people were like, hey, there's a werewolf running around, this is exactly how he would react.
Yeah. I said that to Tina multiple times. Like, he's not really acting. No. He's just there.
He's like, whoa. And I also want to say this. As Sophia Wheeler, a fan of the show, messaged me because I had posted that we were watching this. And she told me that Corey Haim tried to sell his jacket from this movie for $16,000.
Wow.
And then he was also on his same eBay page, was also selling his hair and molars.
Okay. Did they sell?
She said, she found the article for me, but I think eBay like shut it down. Like it was gaining traction, and then eBay was like, yeah, you can't sell your fucking body parts.
Yeah. Some of his molars.
It's fucking crazy. It's fucking nuts. So we open up. The last full moon of that spring came a little more than a month before school let out for summer vacation.
Have you seen this before?
Oh,
you're reading something. I'm sorry.
No, I had not. I thought I had seen this, and I had definitely had not seen this. Which is a ton of movies we've done recently. I've been like, yeah, no, I think I've seen that, and then I watch it. I'm like, nope, this is not at all what it was. And I'm kind of torn on it.
So I've seen this multiple times in my youth, and we actually watched it last year again.
Yeah.
I like it. I mean, werewolf movies as a whole, they're pretty hit or miss. This one is pretty enjoyable.
You know what? I'm with you with that.
It's not like The Howling or American Werewolf. I mean, those are like masterpieces, but this is fine. I'm fine with it.
I'll be honest. I think I might rather watch the – I'm just not the biggest American Werewolf fan. I think I'd put this over American Werewolf. Not in terms of
that.
Not in terms of how good of a movie it is, but what I'd rather watch.
That is fucking silly.
But then again, my notes in this, like, I thought, so I watched it, wrote my notes, obviously. Then on Letterboxd, I was like catching up on my Letterboxd shit, and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot to put that in. And I gave it a very favorable review. And then just now, before we start recording, I looked through my notes, and I was like, wow, I think I hated this fucking movie. Like, there's just things that I wrote on here that like are just very harsh, and I don't know.
So I posted my note on Instagram, and it was just all. That's literally the only thing I wrote down was Gary Busey's hee-haw joke, and I didn't even write down the joke, and I don't remember the punchline. So that note is literally useless.
Wait, what was the hee-haw joke?
When Gary Busey first shows up, he's telling Corey Haim like a bartender joke, but it's like a legitimate bartender joke. And he hee-haws, because like the donkeys, you don't remember that? He hee-haws for quite a long time. And the punchline is so corny. I laughed for like 20 minutes, but that was...
Hang on, I got it right here. What? The punchline is after he screams.
He always called me that.
He always calls me that. Well, that's a good joke. So at the end of that thing I was reading, it says our town's long nightmare began that night. This girl narrates this film for way too long. It was like an audiobook. It was brutal. And I believe this is an issue just with Stephen King movies in general, because they're all like 30,000 pages long. And I mean, I don't know for a fact if Silver Bullet is or if it was like a short story or whatever. But based on what she was reading, it sounded like she was reading from the book. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've never read this one. It's based on the book Cycle of the Werewolf. It's one of the Kings I haven't read.
I'd be very curious. I'd love to know if these words are exactly word for word, because it seems like the opening to a Stephen King story, like 100%. I mean, it is a Stephen King story. So
it is true.
And we open up to spring 1976. What Stephen King book doesn't start off with an old drunk?
Also true.
And this old drunk is shoveling the railroad, and right out of the gate, werewolf shows up and fucking gorilla slaps his head off.
Yeah.
Just fucking pops that head right off.
And that's the thing, like, this movie, it doesn't really hold back on the kills.
No, not at all.
You think with a young Corey Haim, it'd kind of be, you know, Stand By Me-ish or whatever.
Yeah.
But no, it doesn't hold back.
No, it's fucking good, man. So werewolf knocks off his head. This town is very resilient to the idea of, like, despite all the gruesome murders, like, it's very odd what the town's mentality is on all of this. Now, I'm not saying they should believe a werewolf theory, but I feel like at some point they should have shut the fucking town down, because, like, come on, like, this shit is out of control. Also, how often do full moons happen?
Once a month.
Is that a fact?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Well, for some reason in this movie, like, I feel like it happens like every other day in this movie.
No, it most definitely does.
Okay. And most werewolf movies try to, like, they just let it ride. But.
Yeah, they do.
So we
A full moon occurs once every 29.5 days. Oh, so right. Essentially once a month.
All right. Well, the more you know. The more you know. So we meet the narrator, who is Josie. Is that her name? Janie. Janie's got a gun.
Yes, Jane.
Jane. And her brother, Marty, who is played by Corey Haim. We're introduced to them. We're introduced to them in a weird scene where Marty's telling his friend to scare his sister. He's like, use this snake to scare my sister. And he does. And then she gets super upset because she gets scared and falls in mud. And Marty...
biggest mud pile ever.
Biggest mud pile ever. And Marty looks at him and is like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, are you fucking kidding me? And, oh, Marty is in a wheelchair, we should note.
Yes.
This is also a gas-powered wheelchair. Fucking highly dangerous. And it somehow gets more dangerous later on in the movie, so...
Well, because Gary Busey gets involved.
Anything Gary Busey gets involved with is essentially insanely more dangerous. We cut to this to a super weird scene of a woman revealing to a man that she's having his baby.
Yeah, and we see, this, like, comes into play because Jane's just pissed and, like, in the bushes. So she's eavesdropping. And just on these two unrelated people.
And it is one of the saddest scenes I think I've ever seen in a movie. This woman is telling this guy, like, this is your baby. And he's like, that ain't my bun in your oven. And he leaves her on the note, remember the good times, know what I mean. And splits, and she just starts screaming, please help me, the woman.
Right, and then it gets even more depressing in about 5 minutes.
Oh, yes, when this woman, this pregnant woman, we find her at her house, and she's contemplating suicide.
Kill herself, yes.
And she goes, suicides go to hell, especially if they're pregnant, but I don't even care. That is the saddest thing I've ever...
dark, yeah.
That's the saddest thing I've ever...
Every time I see that, like I said, I watched this movie a year ago, and every time that line comes out, I'm like, holy shit, did that really just happen?
Dude, it breaks my fucking heart. It's unbelievable.
Don't worry, she doesn't do it. She's just immediately murdered by a fucking werewolf.
She is murdered by a werewolf who climbs up, like, the garden trellis. And this werewolf is, you know, like, you don't see it yet, you just kind of see these, like, it's POV, killer POV, And except you see these weird little like monkey paws are as its hands climbing up the trellis, and I just thought that was so funny. Like the little wolf paws fit in the little tiny garden trellis holes. But yeah, this werewolf climbs up there and just slaughters this fucking girl, like just destroys her.
This fucking pregnant girl.
It's a fucking bloodbath. And depressing. Equal parts depressing and a bloodbath.
Yeah, and then the mom comes in and she's like, oh my God.
Yeah,
the whole thing is heartbreaking. That might be the most heartbreaking scene in movie history.
Dude, fucking Meemaw comes up with a gun. Oh God, she's dead though. She is dead. Oh fuck. So Marty's got a motorized wheelchair, which I just think is fucking insane. And we learn kind of where the title Silver Bullet comes from, because that is the name of the wheelchair.
Yeah, not the thing that kills werewolves.
Yeah, but it is also that.
Fucking wordplay.
Meanwhile, all this is happening. Like, the local townsfolk are freaking out about these murders, but just, like, not enough. They're just kind of concerned. They're like, man, if people keep dying, this is going to be a tough week. Like, that's what we're at right now. And then we are introduced to Gary Busey, who plays drunk Uncle Red, who is very similar to Tom Hanks's character in my favorite television show, Family Ties.
Remember we did that episode?
We did. Drunk Uncle Ned was his name, yeah. Not Red.
Do you still have that?
Yeah.
No, we should release that. This should be a Patreon app.
We should just put it up as this episode.
Dude, please do that in the future. Like, if I can't record or you can't record or something, we don't have an episode, just put one of those up. And we'll be like, what the fuck?
What the fuck is this? And Uncle Red is really pushing. He's like Little Marty's. He believes in Little Marty.
He does.
Whereas everyone kind of babies Marty and worries about him and shit, Uncle Red is just not about it.
That is true, and that was actually a pretty damn good scene with good dialogue, which you would not expect in this kind of movie.
Right.
When he's, like, talking with the mother, because the mother's like, you come around here, and he's impressionable, and he kind of lays into her. He's like, quit babying him. You know, he's still a human. He's going to figure it out on his own, blah, blah, blah.
I fucking loved that scene. I thought that scene was fucking great. It was good. It was good. It was also weird. When I was looking at reviews for this movie, people were like, really saying that this was a pro-disabilities film, which, I mean, I'm laughing, but I just mean it, like, that's just a weird thing to say. Because I did not get that from that, besides that one scene where he's like, don't baby Marty. I don't really see it as, like, you can do anything.
Well, I mean, especially for the time, how many movies had a protagonist that was disabled?
You know what? You're fucking right. You're fucking right. When you put it that way, when you point out the very obvious thing that everyone else is thinking about.
The main thing. It's literally the only thing.
Well, people in this town do not like Marty, including Marty's got this, like, little girlfriend, and he walks her to her house, and the dad comes outside and is like, get fucking lost. And as Marty's driving away, he says something along the line. He's like, yeah, all the cripples, they use up all the welfare. It's like, oh, that's sweet. That's sweet. But good news is he gets destroyed by a werewolf.
He does.
Like, again, this werewolf, the gore in this, like you said it earlier, the gore in this is actually really good.
It is. It's not bad.
Dude.
It's enjoyable.
This guy gets fucking slaughtered in his greenhouse where the werewolves are crawling under it for some reason. I'm not sure why, but the werewolves are underneath the greenhouse. And at this point, you just got to shut the fucking town down. But that is not the case.
You do. And you know what else is, like, what makes this movie enjoyable? Is, first of all, I think Corey Haim, especially for, like, a child actor, he's pretty damn good. Like he's likable and he's convincing. But the supporting roles of the sheriff, played by Terry O'Quinn, He's so fucking good.
Yes.
And people know him. He's the stepfather in the stepfather movies. And he's the guy from Lost. I forget his name, Locke. But he plays this awesomely. And then the priest, who we'll talk about in a few minutes.
Yes.
Played by the guy who plays Big Ed in Twin Peaks.
Yep.
He's fucking phenomenal.
That's what I was going to say. Big Ed kills it in this. Like, fucking kills it in this. He does.
I even said to Tina, it's like, he's the only one that, like, really gives a shit. Like, he's going, like, the extra mile. Like, every scene he's selling, it's fantastic.
He seemed like the only one that was actually acting. Because, like, almost like he didn't stick out. Like, if he was surrounded by other really great actors, like, it would be unnoticeable. But I think it's because he's around a bunch of people just, like, phoning it in that you're like, oh, this guy's doing a really good job. So it's not like
like the scenes where he's confronting Corey at the end, like, he's legitimately terrifying, and he's like, I don't know, the way he's like portraying his inner struggle, it's fucking great.
And it's fucking nuts. He's good, but what's not good is the bar full of the townsfolk that is trying to organize like a mob to find out who killed this, and it's literally like the South Park joke of the rabble. It cuts to the bar and it's literally people being like rabble, and it's just like the South Park bar. It's so fucking weird. And they're very upset because little Brady dies. He's the first kid death in the movie.
Yes.
A very innocent child death.
He's the one that made the sister fall in the mud in the beginning.
Oh, is that the same one?
I think so, because that was Marty's like good best friend.
Oh yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
And again, another heartbreaking scene because the dad or the sheriff finds a bloody kite.
Fuck yeah, dude!
And then the dad shows up because he's like, I can't find my son, and he sees the kite and just like loses his shit.
Dude, it's so fucking crazy. It's so fucking good. And so the entire town wants to become vigilantes, and kill this person, which I thought was fucking weird because. It's like the smallest town in the world. Wouldn't you just assume it was one of your own?
You'd think so.
Yeah.
Or you'd assume you could easily figure it out.
Yeah. Meanwhile, while this is going on, Marty is telling everyone he can that it's a werewolf. Which, yeah, it's insane. And Uncle Red is just like, hey, man, there's no such thing as werewolves. But people start acting really crazy when the moon's full, which... Like, hey, man, if somebody's killing people because the moon's full, I would probably just classify them as a werewolf. Like,
so there are people that think that's true. So you're just going with the whole werewolf?
Yeah, it's just a werewolf. I mean, I don't think you'd murder people. Like, I believe people act weird when the moon's full, but like to go out and slaughter people is just a lot. It's a lot. So then the vigilantes, they finally went out. Because the sheriff is doing everything in his power to just fucking tell everyone to cool the fuck out.
He is. But he has this big oaf of a deputy.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And all he does is start bar fights.
That might be his job description. I think when you're...
And, like, it's funny because he doesn't, like, go out of his way. It's just his presence just makes people angry.
It's so true. He pisses everyone off, like literally everyone off. Like, isn't one guy like, make me your deputy? And the sheriff's like, well, this guy is the deputy. Like, they just ignore this idiot. It's so fucking funny. But they win and they go out walking through the foggiest forest of all time, trying to find this guy who's killing people. And my favorite scene in this movie is when an adult female asks an adult male, two adults, if he's going to make lemonade in his pants. And it just is like really alarming for adults to be saying to each other, like, making lemonade. Like, I haven't heard somebody refer to piss as lemonade in fucking decades, probably.
I haven't heard anybody refer to that ever.
Make lemonade in his pants. I don't know why that shit makes me laugh so hard.
It's funny as hell. It's ridiculous.
So they're walking through the woods, and guess what? The werewolf's there, and the werewolf's picked up a new move since his last murder, because now he's swinging a baseball bat around. To be fair, he steals it from one of the people.
Yeah, what it has Peacemaker written.
Peacemaker written on it. And the werewolf kills these guys, then takes the bat and literally just starts bludgeoning people. I'm all for werewolves, more werewolves with weapons. Werewolves. I like it. It's fucking great. Well, you know what? That's the difference between like the bullshit werewolves that just like guys, people turn into wolves, and then like a wolf man. I want a more of a wolf man who like will use something to his advantage, like a bat.
Yeah, I'm with it.
Why not? Oh man, this is fucking great. So we cut to a, it doesn't even matter, but we cut to a dream. Whose dream is it? Do you even remember? Is it Marty's dream? It doesn't matter. But we see the Reverend preaching. It's the Reverend's.
It's the Reverend's dream.
Yeah, which is weird. Because then everyone starts becoming werewolves. See, that's what's good. It throws you off the scent here. So the Reverend's preaching in this dream, and the dead kid's dad comes in and says, "There's no comfort, only private justice." And then everyone starts becoming werewolves, and it's just this fucking wild dream. And then the preacher wakes up.
One of them is hitting the organ like such a fucking maniac.
Dude, I had that in my notes, but I was like, do I even bother saying it? He's playing the piano like a fucking, like it's insane. It's fucking insane. I should probably, when we release this episode, I should probably make a fucking meme of that fucking guy playing the piano.
Dude, I mean, because that guy's clearly just an extra, and he probably had like a stern talking to afterwards. Like, what are you going to break our equipment? What are you doing?
This is a church's organ. Like, yeah. Please leave it alone.
This is borrowed property. You have a non-speaking role. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Oh my God, that is so fucking funny. Well, back in the real world, Gary Busey has made literally the most dangerous vehicle known to man for his paraplegic nephew.
And the best part is Corey sneaks out of his house with this. You heard that noise earlier in the episode of my neighbor's car. It would be just as loud. It's such like a clangy piece of metal, and it's gas powered.
It's it's insane. It is a rocket ship. He's driving a rocket ship. And also, I love this because Gary Busey's like, "All right, now go on, play with those fireworks out in the woods." Like, people are getting picked off and torn to shreds, and Gary Busey's like, "Hey, little paraplegic nephew, why don't you play in the dark, creepy woods?" And I've never seen woods so foggy in my life. So Marty does go out there to play with fireworks. And for some reason the werewolf is there. But also, for some reason, the werewolf is, like, taking his sweet-ass time with this kid. Unlike the other people, who he just, like, slaughters instantly.
Yeah, I don't know why, because he's already killed the kid, so it's not, like, the moral issue. And,
no.
Like, this kid eventually gets dirt on him, so he would want him gone, like, immediately.
Oh, yeah. And this
he just, like, talks to him over and over again.
And also, a key scene here, in a non-Italian film, we get somebody who gets their fucking eyeball shot in with a bottle rocket.
Yes.
And fucking great scene. But, you know, this should clear up if the werewolf is real. Marty's saying now the werewolf will have, the human will have one eye.
Correct.
And we get a montage of Marty telling Janie about the werewolf. So she starts going around town asking for bottles and cans for the church donation. And it's actually like a pretty cool scene because she's literally just staring people in their eyes. And literally every person she walks into is like, "Why are you looking at me?"
they all look so annoyed that this girl is staring at them.
It's so good. Like, literally every single character is like, is there anything else you need? Like, what? Why are you just looking at my face?
There's one scene where she goes into a parlor and she's like, hey, do you guys have any more bottles? And it just, like, slow pans to each and every single person's face. And they are all so fucking annoyed.
They're so pissed at her. They're so fucking mad at her. And finally, she kind of, like, gives up. She's like, whatever, I'm just going to bring the bottles and cans to the church, drop them off. And we see the Reverend. He turns his head.
This is a great scene because she shows up and he's like gardening, so we can see his face.
Yes.
It's revealed to the audience that he is wearing an eye patch.
Yep.
She's talking to him, you know, la-di-da-di. She's not aware. And it goes on for a while. And when she puts the bottles down, she sees the broken baseball bat and then realizes, like, she sees him. He's wearing an eye patch.
Yeah, and I feel like that element isn't done a lot in a lot of the current movies I've seen. Like, I feel like they always want the reveal to be done to both parties at the same time. There was a lot more suspense in this scene.
It's true, because you know, and you're like, fuck, when is she going to find out?
Right,
like, it's done well.
Yeah, and she corners herself in a garage, and we know that this guy's a fucking werewolf maniac.
Exactly.
And you're like, oh, shit.
It's well done.
Yeah, it's super well done. And as she's dumping the cans in to this garage, she finds the peacemaker. Which I guess she knew. I don't know how she knew.
Well, that, I mean, it's a small town. I have a feeling that guy brings that everywhere.
that guy definitely talks about the peacemaker everywhere he goes.
Probably pulls it out at every chance he can get.
Yeah, and the reverend corners her and is like, yep. Can I help you with something? And she's just like, no, she runs away. And we get a really classic, especially for the 80s, brother and sister versus the world kind of moment. No one believes them. They believe in the werewolf together now, and they don't know what to do because no one will believe them. So they write him letters. They cyberbully the priest, but before cyberbully. They write this priest a note that tells him to go kill himself. The priest doesn't like that, though. He's really unhappy about this note. So unhappy that he follows Marty home and tries to fucking kill him.
This scene is so extreme. He's trying to run him over. He's in his car. And... like, props to the stunt people, because this like looks very real.
I would be willing to put money on the fact that somebody was definitely really hurt in the making of this scene. Dude, he's
driving like a maniac, and like Corey is like just getting out of the way, and the car is just missing, and like he's taking the time to like back up and line it up again.
Dude, it is a wheelchair versus a car at the end of the day. Like, there's no way no one got hurt on this set. Like, it's fucking crazy. It's fucking nuts.
I also love it because, Corey gets away somehow, miraculously.
Yeah, that's the more insane part, but yeah.
But later on, the priest confronts him in a different setting, which we'll go into more detail. But the priest is like, I would never, like, try to hurt you. You just tried to run him over multiple times.
Yes, yeah, it's really fucking weird. Actually, that's the next scene, isn't it? Like,
when he's in the shed?
Yeah, yeah. So he crashes into the shed. And that's when the priest is like, listen, I won't kill myself because that's a fucking sin. Which I think is the funniest, most realistic thing I've ever heard about. Like, dude, Larry Talbot in, like, the original Wolfman is so, like, fucking torn about, like, living his life. And it's just, like, a brutal portrayal of, like, I hate myself for being the Wolfman. And this guy's like, listen, I get it, but it's a sin. I'm not going to do it. Like, I'm not fucking... like, as if God would take in a werewolf.
Like, what? Heaven's filled with fucking lycanthropes.
as long as they didn't kill themselves. Dude, they just fucking kill people. All right, anyway.
Which is an actual commandment.
Right. And which is also weird because he is kind of saying, he mentions it, I think it is in this scene where he starts talking about, he mentions the pregnant girl and he's like, she got pregnant out of wedlock. Or and that she was going to kill herself, so he prevented a sin from happening or something. Like, it was insane, though. It was fucking insane.
He has his kid dead to rights. And also, keep in mind, he's a fucking werewolf in a very small town. So all the talking is unnecessary. And then the kid just starts calling for this fat-ass farmer. And the werewolf's like, oh, God, I better get out of here. Like, just dispose of them both and nobody would ever know. You're millions of miles away from everybody else.
It's so true. Oh, fuck, that's funny. And then also, like, they finally, you know, they go to Uncle Red and they're like, hey, man, the preacher tried to run us over. They go to Uncle Red first and Uncle Red's like, no. No, like, yeah. You guys are and then finally he looks at the fucking, the wheelchair, which is like totally scratched up and is like, oh my God, we should probably tell the police. So they go to the police and the police have the same react. Like, they're not telling them that he's a werewolf. They're like, hey, the preacher just tried to run me over. And the cop is straight up like, what are you, an asshole? Like, don't be an idiot. But then sees the scratch, like, he's like, fine, we'll investigate it. And then sees the scratches on the reverend's car and is like, oh my God. It can't be. And then the reverend turns into a werewolf, like, right fucking there.
And once again, bludgeons him to death with the fucking peacemaker.
Dude, brains him with that bat.
I know we keep talking about the kills and stuff, mm-hmm. but like the first blow with the bat was a great special effect because it made such a thick, sickening thud. And you're like, oh my God.
It was fucking gross, dude. It was so fucking gross. And this was their little, I would say that this was their American Werewolf in London moment too. This is like we got to see the transformation.
Yeah, and this is why it's insane that you say American Werewolf is not as good, because American Werewolf in London's transformation is one of the greatest things I've ever seen, and this is not.
Well, I mean, you know, who's to say? Who can say?
Yes.
Who can really say? So while all this is happening, Marty has somehow, like, Gary Busey does not believe in the werewolf up until the very end. Like,
yeah,
never believes in it. However, does decide to make silver bullets just in case.
Just in case.
But
should.
Not even multiple. He makes one because Marty gives him a silver necklace. And Gary Busey's like, even if you were like, okay, I'm going to make one bullet, you know what? Make six. Like, just...
Yeah, fill the chamber.
Call it a day. Yeah. He makes one silver bullet. And luckily, there was a gunsmith in town that also specialized in werewolves. He's like, oh, yes, this will kill a werewolf for sure. Well, the full moon comes back because it's every night. And Uncle Red and the kids are hanging out together.
And did you know this was Halloween?
No.
Like, it takes place on Halloween night.
Oh, that's weird, because that would be terrifying to have children roaming the streets.
It would. I wish they, like, played more into it.
Yeah, that would be
fucking... Made it more obvious.
There's nothing going on. Besides that the kids are up late, and then finally Uncle Red's like, listen, guys, it's time to go to fucking bed. Like... You guys are so full of shit. You tricked me again. Like, haha. Like, Uncle Red's an idiot. And then the werewolf gets caught peeping through the windows.
And honestly, that scene is probably the most terrifying one in the movie. Like, I kind of jump every time. It catches me off guard.
Oh my God, that's so funny. I mean, I didn't mind the scene, but it is funny that he's just, like, peeping through the windows. And then the girl's like, oh my God, I just saw him outside. Which, of course, Red doesn't believe him. Then the werewolf cuts the power. And Gary Busey's like, shut up, it's just the fuse. But then, through the mirror, finally sees the werewolf come in behind. And then Red loses.
Also, yeah, because the bullet is in the gun. And yeah. Red's like, you guys are full of shit. But and takes the bullet out, which is ridiculous because things are literally starting to go wrong.
Yes.
That's when he decides to not believe them.
Yeah, he's like, you know what? Just to show you how big of an asshole you are, I'm going to take this bullet out.
Yeah. And he's attacked by the werewolf and it gets knocked out of his hands.
Yeah, into a fucking like air conditioning vent. This is a fucking nightmare. And the werewolf comes in and just starts fucking everybody up.
He throws whoever played Gary Busey's stuntman through like a grandfather clock at such like ferocious speeds. It's fucking wonderful.
Marty manages to get the bullet though out of the air vent and shoots the werewolf in his other eye. And then the werewolf slowly turns back into their priest. And and then it just kind of, I did think that it had a little bit of a weird ending here where Marty goes, I love you, Janie. And she goes, I love you too. And then she goes, I wasn't able to say that, but I can say it now. I love you too, Marty. Good night.
Yeah. And that's the narrator saying that.
Yes, like, a narrator saying that. And that. Which makes me think that it was read like straight from a Stephen King book. Like, that sounds so fucking weird. That sounds like a fucking book. But that's how they end it, man. And that's the end.
Yeah,
it is. So good for that.
I like it, man. I think it's a fun little flick. I definitely recommend
it. I like it. I liked it a lot more like a couple days later. My notes were very negative towards it.
Wow.
So yeah, I don't know why, man. There's no reason. I was just a dickhead, man. I was just being a jerk.
So are you watching movies for Halloween, the 31 days?
Well, I am. I'm catching up. It's on my Letterboxd. You can check that out if you follow me on Letterboxd. I have a whole list for my movie marathon, but there is a catch to my movie marathon, which is I'm also trying to catch up with the cult cinema, the cult classic or cult movie challenge. So I'm trying to do only horror movies out of that, and it has been super funny to like because I'm rating them for a Halloween scale, and I started with Cynthia Rothrock Creek. What was her name? Cynthia Roth?
Yeah.
Rothrock?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
The old martial artist woman. And she had one horror movie where she played a serial killer. And it's so fucking bad. It's so fucking bad. And it's just like, it was the worst start to my Halloween season of all time. It was fucking terrible. But so we have next week is going to be October 16th. Or no, that's when this episode comes out. And then the following week, we will be doing Cursed, another werewolf film.
Ooh, Wes Craven, right?
Yes, yeah, yeah. And then the following week is the Tuesday before Halloween. Now, we can do... should we do a Disney movie or should we do Halloween 6?
What... What's the choice for the Disney movie?
Well, I mean, we could do any Disney movie we want, but we do have two TV choices here from Patreon. Justin Fumahal chose The Midnight Hour, which is an ABC Halloween movie, which I've never seen. And then Ryan Marlowe chose Something Wicked This Way Comes, which is a Disney movie.
I do like Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Do you?
I do.
Do you want to do that for Halloween then?
Let's do it.
All right, so we'll do that. Because I kind of like the Disney tradition better for Halloween. Two grown men who shit on everything, talking about how much they just love Disney movies. So we buck.
I wish we were doing Phantom of the Megaplex.
I have that. If you want to do it,
of course I want to do it. Mickey Rooney, it's a fucking great one.
Maybe I see. That's what I think. I think we should do that too.
Do both.
No, let's do Phantom of the Megaplex.
Okay.
All right.
It's a suck it, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan. You fucking loser. Although Ryan, both of Ryan's picks have been chosen. Dude, I feel like everyone has had at least like one of their picks chosen, even if they didn't. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's crazy. Dude, Marlo picked Cursed, which we're doing, and Rubber. So it's like, it's crazy. Like everyone's gotten what they want, basically. Now I'm going to get so many emails being like, not me. But whatever. All right, so next week, Cursed, and then after that, The Phantom of the Megaplex. Joe, thank you for remoting in again. This is a fantastic setup. Gets the job
done. This was nice. This was this nice
one,
and quick.
This one worked
on a
out.
Saturday night.
Banged it out. Listened to your neighbor peel out, but that was fine.
Yo, I got to ask, have you ever seen Happy Birthday to Me?
No.
Have you ever seen Madman?
Dude, I was literally going to watch it last night because it's coming up for one of my challenge movies.
Which one?
Madman.
But dude, so I watched both of those today. First time viewings for Halloween. I'm trying to get in things like I haven't seen before.
Yep.
Holy shit, man.
Happy Birthday to Me is the guy that gets the shish kebab through the throat in the cover, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's funny you say that because I'm not even sure that happens, but whatever. that movie's fucking insane. Insane. That movie has more red herrings and twists. I loved it. Even Tina was like, wow, that was good. And Madman, I mean, I'm not going to call it a good movie, but I enjoyed every second of watching it.
Really? Dude, 85% of people like it on Google.
Really?
Yeah, but Google, like, who uses Google to rate their movies? Like,
oh, assholes. People that like Mad Men. Yeah. But Mad Men is the only Blu-ray that I own. Because we went to that Connecticut Horror Fest, like the original crew had reunited and nobody was going over and talking to him. So like I felt bad and went and like struck up a conversation and then I got swindled into buying their Blu-ray.
I remember you came back with that Blu-ray and I was like, oh, I've never seen that. Do you like it? And you were like, not particularly. I think you were like, I mean, it's all right.
No, I hadn't even seen it when I
came. Oh, maybe that's what you said. Oh, maybe that's what was even funnier about it then. Because you were like,
yeah, no, they swindled me into it.
Because I know, like, Joe would not buy this, huh? Yeah, Joe would not buy a Blu-ray blindly. Anyway, all right, so that's it. We're done.
It's the worst I've been swindled since some guy forced me in the streets of Waterbury to buy a burned DVD copy of Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift.
Yeah, but your life was on the line with that one.
Well, that's true.
So we'll save that for another time. All right, that's it for this episode. We should do like a show recapping, maybe for Patreon, recapping our Halloween shit sometime during the week or something. We can do it.
Yeah, let me know, because it's easy to set up like this.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, let's do something like that soon for Patreon. And that's, yeah, it though.
I would love to briefly talk about those movies.
Yeah, dude, like that, it's kind of fun to just like bang through like five movies at once, like that you just watched or something. Like it's cool to do that shit.
Yeah. Let's do it.
All right. So that's it, everyone. Rate, review, subscribe on iTunes. If you do, send me an email, sean@ihatehorror.com, and I'll send you some stickers. We're on Instagram. We've also ditched Snapchat at this point. So you can find me on Instagram at ihatehorror, and we're at facebook.com/ihatehorror. Joe, you're at Instagram.
Boognish 1985.
So thank you all so much. We really appreciate the support. I mean, being serious, like that sounded so lethargic, but like seriously, you guys are fucking crazy these days. The support's just like gone through the roof, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah, the people sending the pictures of like wearing our merch or receiving our merch.
Nuts, and man.
Like I said, just the people that are coming up to us at live shows, it makes it worth it.
Dude, so it was fucking crazy. Dude, that night, like, people were just coming up to me being like, great show tonight. And I was like, that's fucking weird. Like, this is fucking...
I know, man. I know we're trying to wrap up and I keep babbling, but like, Linnea was waiting for me
to
finish talking with our fans. She's like, think about that. That's fucking insane.
Yeah.
She was waiting for me to finish, like, greeting people that wanted to talk to me. Like, that's surreal.
It was nuts. Like, people taking pictures with us.
Yeah.
That fucking blew my mind. All right. So that's it, guys. Thank you all so much for the support. And for Joe, this is Sean. Stay weird.
Thank you.
Adios.
That's it, guys.